the fact that is the demand is there and the economy continues to recover. It's been a little bit slower, but we should be in store for a pretty strong 21 as long as this next round of stimulus goes through.
Welcome to the RAND CRE Show, commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella. The man, the myth, the legend, Will Coleman is saving the world right now in the financing world. But today I'm super excited to have our guest, David Kahn, the managing analyst for CoStar, recurring guest, a phenomenal speaker. And we had the podcast we were just talking before over almost a year ago. By a couple months, and I'm glad we're all survived 2020 and on to new, bigger and better things in 2021. So welcome to the show, David. How's it going?
It's going well, all things considered. And as you said, we were talking just before we started recording. Feels like a lot longer than a year than we were on here. So just happy to be back and thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I think, like we said before, 2020 was a wild year. Looking through the last podcast, who would have thought collections would continue to rise, valuations continue to rise, the world didn't end. And like we said, we recorded in March of last year. So I think it's continuing to see that valuations have gone up. But what have you kind of seen, you know, reflecting on the podcast? What have been your shocks, surprises, and learning lessons from that podcast to now?
Well, it was fascinating looking back and kind of seeing what our mindsets were going into it. And of course, a lot of our thought was so much on the downside risk. What could happen? There was so much uncertainty. How will the fiscal stimulus play out? How will B and C rents hold up? How will collections hold up? And how will different markets hold up in the impact of the pandemic, which we still didn't really know much about from a public health standpoint. So looking back, it's interesting that the B and C class that we were definitely worried about in terms of collections and then occupancies and rent growth really has held up well. And through most markets. And a lot of that was due to the adequate or more than adequate in some ways fiscal stimulus, the CARES Act, and then the most recent round, and then probably getting another round of stimulus going forward. So that's not to say that many people were definitely left on the sidelines. Many people are still hurting. It is a tragedy economically, public health wise for so many millions of people. But by and large, the B and C class space was quite resilient in most markets.
And I did a poor job of explaining, but David primarily focuses on the Southeast and Atlanta. And I think just being more in the Southeast compared to the New Yorks, the Californias, not saying the shutdowns, you know, not as extreme with the shutdowns, and we're still very cautious as a group and in our cities and where we operate. But I think the biggest thing is we didn't have that halt in the economy like you've seen in New York or in California. We still had our emergency workers. We still had our restaurants. And I think because of that availability to work helps stimulate the economy, the BC markets on top of as operators, we really had to hunker down on our customer service to provide so much value because there's so many rental assistance programs and like we said last time, just everything is getting thrown at us every single day as operators. So it's like every day is a final exam but in the end, we had to make sure we're helping our residents, whether it's rental assistance, helping them through, because as we all learned in 2020, if you just sit and watch the news, you're afraid to go outside, go on Facebook, like you're just surrounded by panic. So by being that rock, helping people kind of sift through the noise, you as an operator probably did really well in 2020. And if not, I mean, these are still opportunities to continue to refine that process.
Absolutely. And it was an opportunity to shine in that way for many operators and be understanding and to work with people. And as you mentioned, in the Southeast, we didn't shut down quite as severely. We reopened relatively quickly. part of that is the public health situation. Part of it is the leadership on a state and local level. But also a lot of the economies in the Southeast, like you look at a Dallas-Fort Worth or an Atlanta or a Charlotte or a Raleigh, a lot more diverse, not too focused on leisure and hospitality. You mentioned last time how one of your checklists for a market is, it is a market to overweight in the leisure and hospitality sector. And if you look at how markets were hit initially by job losses and how they've recovered recently, that has played out very, very closely to what we would have expected heading in. You know, leisure and hospitality has still struggled and had a pretty terrible month in December, while other services such as professional business services, office using employment, and of course, trade transportation, which has really been a boost for markets such as Dallas and Atlanta. That's your B and C class demand, and that has held up quite well and is actually well above pre-COVID levels in many markets. So it's again, knowing your market, knowing what your rental, what your renter profile looks like, and being able to adjust based off that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point too, because in the leisure space, not only do you have the job freeze, but also the consumer confidence to afford on top of enjoy that vacation, right? So going to Disney World in the midst of it, I'm probably not going to be as excited or weary of a plane. So it's just a lot of different factors of economic consumer confidence. But like you said too, that consumer trade, I mean, think of all the Amazon purchases that have happened and those warehouses, which I think a lot are in the Southeast as well. Those, like you said, those are your BC residents and helping them through. So if anything, I think this has just been a catalyst, not quite as Austin-like, Austin, Texas, but I think it's just really catalyzing a lot of people's and reevaluations of why are we here, right? It's the New Yorkers that have, I've grown up here. I love New York. And Californians the same thing, right? It's that gut check of what am I doing with my life? And even so it's been amazing to see just the economy, you know, people having those realizations and then pouring money into it, because we've seen a lot on the acquisition side, a lot of 1031 buyers in the Northeast coming down to play in our playground. So it's been fun, challenging, and everything in between.
Yeah, and it's so many great points there. It's a lot of it is continuation of what we've seen over the past decade, multiple decades of a southward migration to less expensive metros where there's still a lot of jobs available. The pandemic has really put a spotlight on that. And I think the mainstream media and a lot of outlets who weren't really picking up on that before now are and are making a big deal about it. But that's something that, you know, you and I and Will, we've been talking about this for a long time, and we continue to see the growth in that space. I do think from a capital markets perspective, it really is taking hold a lot more since the pandemic. I could say for Atlanta, we saw $4 billion worth of sales happen in Q4. That was a record by $1.5 billion. Yeah, it was all of the Q2 sales that didn't go through, and we did see a pretty big pause. They came to fruition, and it was partially due to the market's resilience and recovery from a fundamentals and rent perspective, but also just more people having eyes on Atlanta. And you can't even underestimate here locally, and of course I'm talking about Atlanta a lot, but being in the news with the election and just the amount of demographic change that we've seen in the metro area, not just in Atlanta, but also in the South, people are realizing, you know, this is a really fast-growing, diverse, exciting place, and you could still get better yields, probably not as much anymore, but, you know, acquire properties for a little bit less. You could do a value add. You could still, and then you'll be able to sell that property relatively quickly. The liquidity is just incredible, and there's a lot of buyers out there, so.
We've peaked in Atlanta for the 2 years I've been full time, and Atlanta was hot then, and it is insane how much hotter it's gotten, because like we said, diverse job, large jobs, employers, but also very diverse. So on top of continued infrastructure build with the airport and everything growing there, Every time you think it's going to slow down, it never does, because there's one more thing coming, one more infrastructure build. And, you know, it's that the metropolis continue, the MSA, I feel like, continues to expand, because, and now the brokers, it's, instead of it being 20 minutes from Atlanta, 30, 40, now it's going to be like probably in Alabama or something by the time it stops. But Atlanta can just continues to grow and be such a strong market for all of those reasons and those fundamentals.
Right. And part of that too, just to another point you made before, the patterns, not just with between metros, so in New York and in Atlanta, but within metros. And one trend that we've seen since the pandemic is stronger demand in the suburbs. And we want to still, you know, make sure that we're not saying people aren't leaving the urban areas. Still,
the mass exodus.
Yeah, there's no mass exodus. Exactly. And I mean, there's certain areas that so downtown San Francisco, even downtowns of Charlotte, Nashville, really took a hit. Part of that is the supply pipelines that were in those submarkets, but you know, part of it was you don't need to walk to work when you're working from home. So that we have seen an increased desirability in the suburbs, increased desirability for 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom units throughout the country as well. Rent growth in the 2- and 3-bedroom space way above the 1-bedroom in studios. So part of that is a location bias where there's just more 2- and 3-beds in the suburbs. But you also just see people who are looking around their 650 square foot apartment. They need the home office. They need me too. And I mean, look, I've been a renter by choice for 5 years in Atlanta here, and I'm looking to buy. Because if you do the math and you're looking at a 2.5, 2.6 mortgage rate, it's in a lot of cases it would be stupid not to. So, you know, not to skip around too much, but we have seen that, and that's a concern for us on a macro scale. If you see a real big increase in the home ownership rate, you worry about apartment demand. You worry how much of that is being siphoned from the demand pool. But we haven't seen that. We've seen record demand or near record demand throughout the country. So that's been an interesting trend to follow, that we did see demand bounce back in the second half of the year. And part of it was decoupling. Part of it was just the effectiveness of the CARES Act. And people who were at home, they had more disposable money. They were able to save a lot of money and either put that into a down payment or rent a bigger apartment.
Yeah, I read the IRR report for 2021, and the largest home ownership swings were under 25 and over 45. And those were the bigger groups. And I think that as a result, like you said, you're paying a premium to live in a downtown location. All of that got restricted, you know, all the bar scenes, whatever, you know, the cycle bars, whatever you may have, right? Your little vice in that premium and that 650 square foot. Now you don't have that, right? So is it cheaper to go, you know, go out to the suburbs, buy a Peloton membership, right? And it's, you know, a lot of people, I still believe, and I think you do as well, that we're a renter's nation. That's why we're seeing the build to rents continue to rise. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just people are putting a premium on space now, because the last thing I want to do is roll out of bed to, you know, when we were not working from our office, was I'd have to roll out of bed 2 feet from my bed to go to my desk that I found. And it's just like, it's the rinse and repeat. And you're just like, it's Groundhog Day every single day. So I think if you can kind of just have the more space to compartmentalize, I know for me, I have to have my own like workspace is my fun space, and just having that, you know, it's interesting to kind of see those people who can move execute on that. And I think that's also another good point you brought up, is making sure as operators we're measuring the home ownership cost versus renter's cost, because obviously in more of the workforce housing, it might not be as big of a risk, but you still need to evaluate that upfront cost, because if someone can afford, if you're losing to home ownership, that could cripple your operations, and then you might have to lower credentials to get residents in, and it's just a death spiral in the making. So that's a very good point to bring that up when it comes to acquisitions.
Absolutely. And the lowering of the mortgage rates and the little bit of a push for down payments. If you put, you know, 5% down, 3.5% down, it's within reach to a lot of people. But a lot of people who make that jump don't understand all the costs that go into home ownership. So it's difficult sometimes to articulate that. And for certain people, they might be getting out in front of their skis. But again, the heartening thing for me from a rental perspective is, despite that huge increase in the home ownership rate, demand was still strong. So more households were formed, people getting out of their roommate situation most likely, but not really downsizing in terms of space, really has boosted the market. And even those downtown areas, they have started to see a resurgence. The rents are still down, but you're still seeing demand. You're still seeing the warm bodies move in. It might be at a lower price point. It might be with 2-3 months free concession, but the fact that is the demand is there and the economy continues to recover. It's been a little bit slower, but we should be in store for a pretty strong 21 as long as this next round of stimulus goes through.
Absolutely. And I think to the increase in valuations, I'd love to kind of hear what you, with strong valuations, is I'm sure it's probably strong collections. And so where have you kind of seen, you know, the A's, B's and C's shake out, and kind of where do you see, you know, 21 moving forward?
Yeah, the collections, it's been interesting to follow because a lot of it, I think you see people wanting to say that collections are finally falling every month, but really you see that sometimes when the day just falls on a Saturday or another weird day, and the data comes in the next week from the NMHC and it's back to normal. We have been consistently surprised by the resilience of collections and really in A, B, and C. Where I think we might be missing a little bit is the real mom and pop, the, you know, fourplex, the 10 unit and below, because the NMHC, it's generally institutional. And CoStar, we track every building, but most of our rents are coming in through apartments.com, 50, 100 units plus. The BNC rents are way up, but that's also BNC professionally managed and generally in big metros. So there's probably a little bit more weakness in that space than is being reported, but all in all, on a macro scale, it does pencil out. It makes sense when you look at household obligations, when you look at the stimulus, when you look at the enhanced unemployment benefits. Most people, it'll sound crazy to say it, but most people have actually held up better during the pandemic than they were before in terms of their personal finance situation. Of course, millions of people have really hit a catastrophe and are doing way worse, but by and large, out of a huge 330 million person country, we've done better. And a lot of that is due to the government assistance.
Yeah, and to your point on the BC space, we've seen January, you know, we've tracked cash collections from February of last year to now, and we've hovered around the 92 to 96%. On the lower months where it's 92, we'll see those payment plans come through the next month. So January of this year, we had 96% physically and economic. So we had a big swing, couple late payments coming in and new collections. And like you said, those mom and pop operators, especially too, it's hard enough to manage an apartment. I can only imagine when you're getting flooded with PPP loans, CDC declarations, eviction moratoriums. There's just so much getting thrown at you. It's like, I just wanted to collect a little bit of money and run through it and just take it easy. Now I have to go above and beyond in management to succeed. And like you said, I think just a lot of, you know, people are getting burnt out on that. So I think it's getting primed for more opportunities. And that's why at Rampart, we're just super bullish and trying to find those by just being anywhere and everywhere, whether it's on market, off market. We're just putting ourselves out there to be in front of operators so we can be their saving grace. But I can only imagine operating an apartment and you're like, okay, this makes me X and I'm good. And then it's just the whole landscape in the year has completely changed. And now you have to be a lawyer, a financier, and just go above and beyond every day.
And now what happens when we quote, go back to normal, hopefully by the end of 21. knock on wood. But it's looking that way when it comes to the vaccines. And again, knock on wood, definitely. But, how do we look forward? And, one thing we're looking at, especially it's supply. There's not a lot under construction right now. We delivered a lot of units. So, there's definitely some upside scenarios there, especially in markets that have done quite well that have not seen a recovery in groundbreakings. There's likely to be this window of late 21 through 22 where there's less supply competition. We've normalized, we've continued to add jobs back, especially those industrial jobs, which are booming. That could present some really strong opportunities for rent growth and value add acquisitions and dispositions at that point. So that's something that we're looking for towards the end of this year. And again, once those vaccines get, once we can kind of go back to normal, I think we'll be surprised how quickly things revert to normal when it comes to demand for urban apartments, demand for, prime suburban, and just a normalization of everything in the market.
With that restriction in supply, is that primarily due to logistics and development costs? Because I think I just heard from other operators, like, we can't get fridges, we can't get stoves. I think everyone has heard timber's gone up more than cryptocurrency in the last month. Like, are those all kind of like that logistics and pricing matter has been kind of the biggest deterrent to continue to develop during this time?
Well, the projects that were underway haven't really skipped a beat. So to me, that's saying, some of those costs haven't been too much of a deterrent. It's really been the starting new projects, breaking ground on new deals. It's been slower because you had that 3 to 6 month lull where we were right in the pandemic. It was still shelter in place in most places, and local jurisdictions and even developers themselves, you want to pump the brakes and see what are we going to do coming out of this. Now we've seen an increase more recently, but still you have that hangover of a 3 to 6 month delay, maybe a couple projects getting deferred here or there, wait and see. And now we're at a situation where we're maybe 3 to 6 months behind where we would have been in terms of groundbreaking. So I think a lot of it, it is possibly material costs and things like that. Labor could be an issue as well. Construction employment is above pre-COVID levels nationwide or in many metros, and that's recovered. But really, it's the delay in starting those projects and reassessing everything, having to re-underwrite everything, and that's almost created a gap in terms of groundbreakings that we saw towards the end of last year.
Yeah, because our group is looking more into development, probably not the right, we're going to take our time with some of the smaller developments just to get our feet wet and continue to gain experience. But looking at development, the biggest thing that was interesting is you're kind of going off you kind of have to build the pro forma, and in a world with nothing but uncertainty, rising, costs and, those, you really have to gut check your pro forma and kind of see where do you think the market's going to be. So as the development continues, there's more and more risk that the world could end, just like we thought a year ago in March 1st. But those certainty, just kind of studying the development side, those certainties you really have to go forward with. So I'm sure those larger developers who have that cash and are bullish on those markets, like everything else in investing, you still have to, you have the quantitative factors, but you also kind of have to listen to your gut and proceed forward, because that's where you're either going to just skyrocket in valuations and you're like, look, we're geniuses, or you look like the dumbest guy in the room. So it's interesting to, in that development space, it's a whole new world, but we're just super excited to continue to learn more about it and hopefully break ground soon.
Yeah, it's exciting. And looking at the data as well, I mean, we, looking and being able to articulate that to a lender, to a local jurisdiction, because a lot of people are probably thinking right now, what are you crazy? You want to build apartments in post-COVID? But if you actually look at the numbers, in many metros, maybe not San Francisco or downtown LA or New York, but these markets have recovered really, really quickly. You know, Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas is on the path to recovery. Tampa, you just have a lot of these markets, and especially in the Southeast, where rents are way up, and you're getting into a situation where you might be underbuilt over the next few years, and that creates its own issues. So you definitely want to stay on top of that and be able to articulate your pro forma and why you think that you can achieve these rents. And it's because we've seen a strong bounce back in jobs and a strong bounce back in rents in a lot of these areas.
Yeah, I think that's a good point of, if you read the headline, you're going to say you're crazy, but digging deeper into the submarkets and really just getting dialed in, I think to any investor, right? You're going to buy an apartment with the world ending. Well, if you look at Dallas, I feel like when you said Dallas recovering, it's like, oh, it went from 92% paying to from 98. But these markets just continue to get hotter and hotter, because I think it's like you said, that restricted supply increases the demand and continue to grow. So I think those are all great points of just do your homework. Don't listen to headlines. I think, but that hopefully you've learned that from 2020 already and continue to grow. But David, one thing I want to really kind of key in on to kind of before we wrap up is the outlook for 2021. You can go by asset class and kind of go by, you know, however you take it, but what do you think is going to happen in, you know, your, you know, we did it last year, but what's your crystal ball telling you for 2021?
So nationwide, we're looking at a pretty strong recovery in 2021. And a lot of that is contingent on the continued job growth that we'll see, that we'll likely see. Looking at our daily rent series, we've seen quite an increase just since January. So after rents flattened out between July and December or so, we have seen an uptick nationally. It's so important to separate the markets that are doing well from the markets that aren't doing well. And part of that flattening out or decline, you had places like San Francisco or places like LA where rents were still falling, but then you had Atlanta where rents are rising, and the Inland Empire and Phoenix. So that was almost, you have your big legacy expensive markets, which were still doing poorly, and then your Sunbelt markets, which were starting to recover and really recovering in certain ways. You don't have as much of a decline baked in for those legacy markets next year. So as those areas recover, you know, San Francisco, they're probably not going to see another year of 10%, 12% rent losses. So if you factor that in with continued recovery through the Sunbelt, you have a pretty solid year for rent growth. And then looking from a supply perspective, with groundbreakings down late in the year, things getting back to normal, we should see a little bit more wiggle room to push rents, especially once this round of renewals is up. That's something I'm looking for as well. I want to point out for Q2 in particular and Q3, all the tenants that signed at maybe a discount or had a concession on properties in the second and third quarter, they might be seeing a little bit of sticker shock in 21 with these rents recovering. You know, they're not looking at the data that we're looking at. They're seeing that they spent or they signed a lease for $1,000 a month, and now market rents are up at $1,100. And that 10% is probably going to be a sticker shock to those tenants, but that's where the market is now. And it's due to the initial hit from COVID and now the strong recovery. So that's something we want our clients to be aware of as well. Overall economy, we're seeing really strong GDP projections. Goldman keeps coming out with, you know, 5-7% GDP growth, which would be, wow, yeah, the best for many decades, contingent on the next round of stimulus. But, you know, 21 definitely looks better than 2020. There's still some downside risk. There's always the thought of, you know, when we can all go back to work, when we can all, you know, return to the office, how that's going to impact suburban versus urban demand and certain metros. But in general, we're looking at a pretty solid year for 21.
I I think those are all great points. I think the job growth one is pretty interesting because in the IRR report, they said the most accelerated they said for as a nation, the recovery will be by 2024. And they took from the most, if they took the most aggressive quarterly job growth from 2010 to 2019, it was like, I forget, it was like 220,000. But it's interesting to see just the Goldman's assuming we're going to even trump that by far greater. But I think it's probably a combination of remote on top of the deliveries. Like the deliveries for restaurants and having that growth. One thing I was curious on your outlook, a lot of people are guessing or projecting their recovery. I've seen a lot of people discuss the K shape. So the A's and B's will continue to rise. And I think a lot of people, the 60s and 70s product will continue to decline because as they get older, the depreciation accelerates even more. I would love to kind of hear your thoughts on other people call it the CapEx tsunami and having to put so much money in the properties. Have you have any insight on kind of what you're seeing in the market versus older versus newer products?
Well, I cover a market where the 60s and 70s product is pretty hot right now. And it really does depend on where you are. And once you get to that point of 60s, 70s product and seeing some of those rents are so low that even a light value add in a certain submarket, you know, you'll be able to push rents up to at least that submarket average level. If the B class is rising by 10-15% in some of these industrial heavy areas that we've seen, again, in Atlanta and in some of these suburban hubs in the Inland Empire, the 60s and 70s product that looks like a bargain to a lot of these renters. And it is definitely still opportunity there, I think. And it might take a lot to kind of get those up to snuff. But when you look at the jobs that are coming in, again, Amazon's hiring hundreds of thousands a year. You have all these third-party logistics firms. You have other e-commerce firms. Retail's bouncing back. And leisure and hospitality is bound to bounce back.
We're going to go on vacations, everyone. That's right, how it is.
Are we going to be back to pre-COVID this year? Is travel going to be back? No. But it's going to improve, and that's going to help out that workforce housing space. So, of course, it depends on the area. It depends on the submarket. It depends on the metro. But all things considered, the C-class space with those rents being low is still a bargain for renters, and it's an opportunity if there's a really big gap between that C and the B space in that submarket or that particular area.
Yeah, and I forgot to caveat, because looking at Atlanta, like you said, there are a lot of 60s, 70s product that hits market and low four caps, mid fours, maybe even some are sub, just because the value add is so heavy. But I think that's a testament to how amazing Atlanta is as a market and how much attention it's getting. And I think too, just in those things, in those markets, on top of that vintage is making sure you have the team and wherewithal and the market and submarket expertise so that you can execute those business plans. So you're not, just chasing a price or a per door number, so you can really thrive.
It's exactly spot on. I mean, not to do too much in Atlanta. I mean, I'm obviously focused on Atlanta, but you know, a 60s, 70s area on the west side. Well, I want to know where on the west side. Is it near the new Bellwood Quarry and the Microsoft development and everything going on there? Or is it in the more interior areas? And that area is going to be a lot different than 60s, 70s in Southeast DeKalb, where your demand profile is different and it's a little bit more suburban. So it really does depend on your asset, where it's located, where the people work. Is there public transit access? And what's your demand profile look like?
Exactly. It's amazing how real estate We try to overcomplicate it, but location, 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 right? Atlanta in the right area is going to do really well if you, as long as you can operate it. So, David, we're going to take a quick moment for our sponsors, and we'll come back with our investor tip.
Is your money working as hard as you are? At RAM Partners, we partner with hardworking investors who are seeking true passive income through multifamily real estate. Partnering with RAND means transparent communication with our webinars, monthly statements, and newsletters. For more information, visit randpartners.com to register for our investor portal and to set up a call with our team.
And we're back. So David provided a ton, per usual, a ton of knowledge, a ton of expertise. What can you tell our listeners is your one investor pro tip?
We said location, location, location. I'll say data, data, data. And, you know, I'm a data geek. This is what we do at CoStar. We're looking at the numbers. And again, we were talking about it at the beginning of the podcast, looking back to last year and what we recorded. And I think part of the reason why we were pretty spot on about some of our thoughts, we were talking about it from that data perspective. We almost put to the side the thoughts and the concerns about the public health situation. Of course, we have to consider that, but what are the fundamentals? What are we looking for from a supply perspective? And how's the U.S. multifamily market going to withstand this? You need a place to live. People needed more space during the pandemic, and we've seen patterns that played out in a way that was pretty reasonable when you look back. So that's, you know, looking forward with supply decreasing, with B and C class likely improving from a demand perspective. You know, I don't think you're going out too much on a limb to expect further improvement in that space, and a little bit of further improvement in A in the downtown areas that took a hit last year, just almost based off gravity. You can't go down that far, and we'll return to normal eventually.
Yeah, and that's the best part. I know we're very numbers focused, is you get to test and measure, right? We, based on the numbers we said, we're hypothesizing this, but for those who aren't as numbers oriented, right? Follow the people and follow the jobs, because if the people are going down there, there's gonna need more jobs. You want to look for increasing rents. I think that people get overwhelmed with pick a market, and you look at the whole entire United States and you're like, where do I now begin? Follow the people, follow the jobs, and the rents will come. So I think it's just, you know, simple as that. But David, if any listeners or investors have any questions, what's the best way they can reach out to you and your team?
They can reach out to me, email me, dcon@costar.com, or please connect with me on LinkedIn. It should be pretty easy to find. If you have any questions about CoStar or apartments.com or any of our other sites, so LoopNet, if you're looking to acquire or to sell a property, LoopNet is the place to be for commercial properties. And 10X is an auction site that we recently acquired as well. So check that out. Really great features with some of our auction profiles and our listings there. So we continue to grow, and we.
I say by the time we release it, there's going to probably be three more other companies CoStar is buying.
And we're looking to add more to the product, more with analytics and investment tools for our clients. So if you have any questions, definitely please reach out on email or LinkedIn.
Yeah, and David is a huge resource, so please reach out to him. He's done a lot of great speaking jobs throughout webinars and courses. So we just, you know, thank you so much, David, for your time and being able to present on the RAND Series show. If you have any questions for me and the RAND Dream team, please reach out to us at info@randserie.com. And until then, we'll see you next week.